I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. Genetically modified super pigs, a thrilling World War II tale of espionage and romance, an 11-year-old genius and his plan to save a friend from the hands of her stepfather. No, you're not having a fever dream. It's just the return of the indie, foreign, and documentary film critics. Today we're exploring the hottest flicks that you can find this weekend on local screens. We do the work, so you don't have to. We'll also meet the local filmmaker responsible for The Tree, a heartwarming story of a lifelong friendship and a good old-fashioned road trip through the Midwestern plains. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Our up-to-date movie critics are back to review the latest independent films showing around town. We're going to cover movies that focus on everything from World War II espionage to an 11-year-old genius to a film about, wait for it, genetically modified super pigs. Who knew? Our critics, once again, are Cindy Haynes, who's back with us. And Cindy, so good to have you here.
Thank you very much, Steve. I'd like to thank Beck Ireland, who filled in for the past three shows. She did a terrific job.
She filled in admirably. She sure did. KCUR Steve Walker is
here.
Good
morning. Steven. Yeah, thanks.
And Bob Butler, who writes reviews for The Star. You can read his reviews at butlerscinemascene.org. And Bob, nice to have you.
Thanks. Greetings all.
We're going to begin this morning with a preview of a film featuring a Kansas City actress, 89-year-old Joycie Appel, in her very first starring role in a feature film. The film is titled The Tree, and it unfolds 3 days in the life of Dorothy Thorpe, who's an 88-year-old widow, as she considers how best to navigate the certainties of declining health and the loneliness of advancing years before setting out on a road trip from Wamego, Kansas to Terre Haute, Indiana, to visit her oldest and dearest childhood friend. With us now is the director of The Tree, Stephen Wallace Pruitt, who wrote the film with Mary Settle Pruitt, whom I gather is your wife.
She is indeed.
She is indeed.
Partner in crime.
The film will open at the Tivoli on July 14th. And Stephen, welcome back to Up to Date.
Thanks so much. Really appreciate it.
Well, this clearly appears to be a labor of love. To what extent did you gamble on 89-year-old Joycie Appel, who was starring in her very first film?
Right. Well, I tell you, if you knew Joycie, you would realize that the real gamble was that we wouldn't make it rather than her, because she is an absolute firecracker of a woman. And frankly, about the nicest person we have ever met in our lives. Totally vivacious. Several times when we were filming, we'd have to say, Joycie, you're 88, you're not feeling well, and because she'd pop right out of bed or something, and it was just like, okay, I can play old.
I can play old.
It was really fun.
Our critics here around the table, Bob, you know Joycie, don't you?
I've been watching Joycie since I became the theater critic at The Star in the late 70s. I mean, she did the dinner theater show. She was in rep productions. She was a constant presence. And, you know, back then she was a youthful 50 or something.
Right.
Even then, you know, she was one of these people, when you saw her name in the cast, you knew it was going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she just had that.
She doesn't have a false note in her work, whether on stage, and I've seen her for years too, or in this film.
Yeah, well, she's just great.
It really impressed me. This is my introduction to her. And I just really appreciated the fact that she didn't play stereotypical old. She played a woman who was 89 years old, and it was just a delight to watch her the screen. You did a great job.
Bob Butler, what do you make of the fact that at age 88, I guess that was when she actually was working on the film, you know, she's making her screen debut in a leading role. What do you make of that?
Good things happen to those who wait and do good work. You know, I'll never forget when Dustin Hoffman won the Oscar for Tootsie, his speech was, America's theater stages are full of great actors who are never going to get recognition. And it's true.
Mm-hmm. And she might be one of
and
them,
she's
you're
one
suggesting.
Of them.
Yeah. Right. Stephen, give us a little more sense of what this film is about.
Well, really, it was inspired by my mother's friendship. Actually, my mother's maiden name was Dorothy Thorpe, and she is the character in the film. And that's the character Joycie plays. And it was inspired by her friendship with her best friend growing up in Terre Haute, Indiana. My mom died 2 years ago, and we were casting about for another film to make, and I just got this idea about her doing the one thing that she'd always told me she wanted to do, which was to go back home to Terre Haute. It just had this magnetic pull on us. And I think, frankly, all of us have this pull to someplace, whether it is, you know, in this case, Terre Haute, Indiana. It's just like, where is your tree? And that's what this really is about, is going back to the one place that you know, the thing she wanted to do again. And for Mom, it was really going back in childhood.
Tell us a little bit more about the tree itself.
Well, the
title of the film,
right? Yeah. The title, it actually is based upon the tree that we actually used in the film, which is, as it comes to find out, it is one of the largest trees in the state of Kansas. It's actually now being measured for championship tree status. And we found this tree while driving near Rantoul, Kansas. I was looking for a big tree, and out of the corner of my eye, about a mile away out in a cornfield, I saw this, what I thought was going to be a really big tree, but it could have been just a bunch of trees. But we drove out to it. This thing is 98 feet tall, 99 feet wide from tip to tip, and it is, a trunk is 8 feet in diameter. So Kansas Forestry Service is actually coming out to measure it. It may be, in fact, the largest tree in Kansas now.
Have you guys, tell us about what questions
well,
you
I've,
have.
I've seen it, and I praise Joycey's work, and it's always nice to see local talent like Scott Cordes, Jennifer Mays, Kip Niven, people who have had really solid theatrical careers here. And just they register on screen too, just as well as they do on stage.
Well, really funny thing about that is that as soon as we announced that the tree was going to star Joycey Appel, we got all kinds of people contacting us saying, I want to be in this movie because I want to be with Joycey. Kip Niven in particular. I mean, he was campaigning to play the role of Wade Garrison. And I told him, I said, Kip, your character has no lines at all.
Right.
And he goes, I don't care. I want to be in this movie with Joycey.
Yeah.
And he did a great job.
Steve, how long have you been making films?
We made our first film in 2000, started shooting it in 2008, finished it in 2009. That was a romantic comedy, which was frankly neither romantic nor comedic making, but it turned out very well. It was our first film. Our second film was titled Terminal, which should have been coming out by now, but we had some problems with sound. We're getting that fixed. So this is actually just our third film.
You wanted to make this film, why, about this particular story? I get the connection with your mom, but what was it about this story that really drove you to invest what you've invested in this thing?
Insanity. Outside of that, it's just for better or worse, I feel I have the heart of an artist, and my wife has been blessed with the ability to work with me on these projects. And so she and I just sat down and wrote, and the story, I think, connected with us really deeply, knowing Mom, knowing how we all feel about people that were special to us. And so that's really what happened.
Tell people what your daytime job is.
Yes, my daytime job. I'm a professor in the Black School at UMKC, teach finance and economics, which is about as far from filmmaking as you can imagine.
And it should be a cautionary tale against filmmaking.
It certainly should. Let me tell you.
Yeah. How big was your budget?
$65,000 in this particular case.
$65,000.
Right. Which, frankly, wouldn't buy hors d'oeuvres in a Hollywood movie.
Right.
And yet, with today's modern technology, and frankly, you know, we, as Mary and I, did so much of the post work and things like that. I mean, we did the color, we did the sound, we did the editing, all that. Would have added a lot to the budget. But today, you know, with the modern digital technologies, even little nobodies like Steve and Mary Pruitt can make a beautiful film.
Where'd you get the money?
About half of it was raised from friends of ours, investors, and the other half came from Mary and I's pocket.
Wow. Okay.
Do you expect to send it on the film festival circuit?
It has actually done very well on the circuit so far. We just we opened, had a world premiere at the Vail Film Festival in Colorado, where we played with only 10 other features in that film, total of 10, excuse me, features. And 8 of them were major Hollywood folks like Viola Davis and Rose Leslie and people like Catherine Keener. They were the stars, Katie Holmes. But then from there, we went to the next week. We opened, had the Kansas City Film Fest, where we were awarded the Audience Choice as the best film. And then a couple weeks later, in Lyon, Colorado Film Festival, we were selected as best feature film. And just yesterday, we were notified that we'll be playing at the San Antonio Film Festival coming up in August. So.
Hey, how did you learn all those different aspects of filmmaking, Stephen? I mean, post-production and color and that you just mentioned. How do you know how to do that
stuff? Well, you know what? It is necessity is the mother of invention. And in this particular case, I ask a lot of questions. You know, I've got people that, you know, are posting on what things called online forums. Okay, I want to do this. How do I do that? And really just a lot of trial and error. And the beautiful thing about it is that you can see the results before you. And it's just like I knew when as soon as we cast Joycey for this film, that we were going to make something special. And happily, it turned out exactly that way.
Given that you're a professor in the Black School, at what point in your life did you say, hey, I want to make films?
You know what actually happened in 2006? I announced one day to my wife that I wanted to make a film next year. And she said, we don't know anything about making movies. I said, you know what, honey? We're smart people. We can figure this out. Now, it wasn't quite that straight, but it actually did turn out really well.
How hard is it to
make
really a film?
Hard. It's hard on every possible level. The most difficult aspect of it is that you can make a mistake anywhere, and that mistake can cause a problem that will cascade all the way down the line. So if you cast the wrong person, you know, and they can't produce a good performance, that you're dead. Okay, it doesn't matter what happens at that point.
But there's also the issue of decisions.
Absolutely.
If I go this route, I have to do this, but, you know, the sounds good here, but what if I, you know, so, I mean, that's, to me, one of the more difficult aspects is making those decisions and making the right decisions, ultimately, when you look at the finished film.
Right, yeah, actually, one of the things that affects me these days, I'm 60 years old now, and we have a tiny crew. This literally my wife and I and four other people. That was it to make this movie. And because of that, I'm, you know, lugging the lights around. You know, I'm the director and a producer and a co-DP of the film, and yet we're lugging all this stuff around. And it's just like, okay, I got to switch hats, and now I'm the director.
I'm curious, when you're dealing with a limited budget and you know you've got a time frame, you got to work in it, does that leave room for you on the set for the happy accident?
You know what? On occasion, it does. We're pretty quick on our feet like that, in that there's been a few times where we tried to do something. I never tried to do something that I'm certain I can't do. I'll try to do something where I think that we can do it, and I'll give it a couple of tries. But on occasion, we do get the happy accident. But most of the time, the happy accidents, frankly, for me, happen in the editing suite. When I you know, it's like, oh my gosh, what if I'm doing
they actually
monitor.
Fit together.
Right, yeah, exactly. And we shot with one camera, which is what most, you know, single camera dramas are done that way. I guess all single camera dramas are done that way now that I think about it. But unlike TV, we'll have mini cameras, in our case, just one. So continuity becomes really important. Continuity, did they pick up the Coke can and set it down in the right place? And I'm kind of obsessive with that sort of thing. But you're still, once you get into editing, that's when you realize it will or it will not hold together.
So do you make this film for the audience, or do you ultimately make it for yourself, Stephen, given how much you invest in something like this?
You know, it's thousands of hours to make a film for us. And we do make it for the audience. And it's just like, you know, here's our opportunity to tell a story that was meaningful to us and hopefully will be meaningful to other people. And frankly, the audience reactions have been terrific so far. So that's been incredibly gratifying.
And you're getting a run at the Tivoli beginning July 14th.
That's correct.
Did you have a connection to Jerry over at the Tivoli, or
no,
how did that happen?
It's a great story. You know, I thought, you know, we need to show this theatrically. And I thought, you know, it's really hard to get into theaters these days because of the way the studios have locked everything up. But the Tivoli's independent. I told Mary, honey, why don't you go in and talk to Mr. Harrington there at the Tivoli? And so she goes in, and he was hoping to meet him, and he happened to be there. And she starts talking to him about the film, and he says, wait, I've already heard about this film. One of my regulars said, I just saw this at the film festival. You guys need to show this. And so she gave him a Blu-ray. He apparently watched it that night, called Mary the next day, said, I love this movie. I want to run it.
Good.
So
okay.
I thought that was great.
Well, interesting story. That's Stephen Wallace Pruitt. The film is titled The Tree. It opens at the Tivoli on July 14th, and you have whetted our appetite.
Great. Sounds thanks good. So much.
Best of luck with it, Steve.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's move on and talk about some films that are opening on area screens as we speak. Our first film today is The Hero, Cindy Haynes. It's about an aging actor who specialized in Westerns who's getting ready to ride off into the sunset. It stars Sam Elliott.
Well, if you're a Sam Elliott fan, this film is
this
for
is
you.
It.
This is it.
Yeah,
are there people who aren't Sam Elliott fans?
Well, some
not
people,
in this room.
It was written and directed by Brett Haley, who had made another film with Sam Elliott, I'll See You in My Dreams. And so he wrote this specifically for Sam Elliott. And I think, Bob, you had written in a review that it's really a shame that his whole life, that he's 72 years old now, has been, he's been a character actor as opposed to a star.
But he's so familiar to us. Why wouldn't someone of this ability,
it's what's for dinner.
Why not a starring role?
I don't know. He's been typecast as a cowboy, and that's what we see depicted in the film. So he's trying, he's gotten a bad diagnosis from his doctor, and he's trying to make amends with family members. And it's a very touching film, I think. Very moving. Laura Prepon plays his romantic interest in the film, and I love the way it's handled because she's much younger than he is. She's known for her performance in Orange is the New Black. Steve, what role does she play?
She plays...
She's like the second lead. She's the heroine's squeeze.
The heroine's squeeze, right, right. And she killed somebody out in the shed. I mean, sorry if you're on season two, but...
Nick Overman is in it. He's Elliot's dope smoking buddy. Kristen Ritter plays his estranged daughter, and he's trying to come to terms with her. And this is a nice touch. Catherine Ross, who is actually Sam Elliott's real wife, plays his ex-wife.
And she played and starred in Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
I have to say, she looks gorgeous. She's 76, I believe.
She's really?
A little older than Sam. She looks incredible.
Well, a little bit past the graduate,
yeah.
Huh?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Sam Elliott considers this film to be one of, if not the best film he's ever made.
Hey, and do you all give it a thumbs up? Or
yes.
What's the
yeah, I do,
this?
Too. It's on my three to see, and I really liked his soulful, honest performance that could have been painful or kind of bitter for him to pull off, but he carries it off well.
I can just see him doing that, having seen him in any number of roles over the years, just how you described it.
I view it as a terrific performance in a so-so movie. That's my attitude toward it.
How can it be a so-so film with a plot like this one has?
Well, a dying guy trying to get back in touch with his family. We've never seen that before.
Yeah, we have. But I have to say, the relationship with Laura Prepon, who's probably 30, 40 years younger than he is handled really well because she's a stand-up comic in the film, and she needles him about their age difference throughout the movie.
Which works.
He's like, yes, I realize that. I know I'm 72.
But I would watch Sam Elliott sit in a lawn chair and read the phone book.
I mean, no kidding. Yeah.
So it's opening today at the Glenwood Tivoli and also Liberty Hall in Lawrence, Kansas.
We have a clip here.
Yes, we do.
It's him and Laura Prepon talking about... they run into each other on the street in L.A. after they've met, the first time they met.
This is from The Hero.
Best talk was in L.A., right?
Yeah. You live around here?
No. Stalking you.
Yeah. Charlotte, right?
Got a good memory for an old pothead.
A sad old pothead. Why'd you say that anyway?
Because you're old and you smoke a lot of weed.
I mean the part about me being sad.
I don't know. Are you?
Oh, I wanted to hear more.
It opens today, yeah.
Again, the film is The Hero. The star is Sam Elliott, and I guess generally positive recommendations from our critics here. Okay, let's do one more before a break here. This is The Beguiled, Bob Butler. It's set in Virginia during the third year of the Civil War. It's about a wounded Union soldier taking refuge in an isolated girls' school, and it stars Nicole Kidman.
Expectations for this are off the charts. Directed and written by Sofia Coppola, who was named Best Director at Cannes this year. Only the second woman in history to get that honor.
Big deal.
It's a remake of a 1971 Don Siegel, Clint Eastwood movie. Given Coppola's status as a woman filmmaker and the fact that it's like almost an all-woman cast with one man, a lot of expectations. What is she going to do with this material? She didn't do enough for me. I say this with a certain amount of trepidation because I was really looking forward to this. I like the Clint Eastwood version better. It was Don Siegel may have been a pulp filmmaker, but he knew how to twist a melodrama and make you get into it. Coppola's approach to this is a little too clinical for me. It's like we're observing bad behavior, but we're never really feeling it. The guy, played by Colin Farrell, he's been shot in the leg. He's being nursed back to health by these women who plan on turning him over to the authorities once he's healed enough. He's a canny son of a gun who at first comes off as a, oh, he's so thankful to be here. You people are so nice. But one by one, he looks at each woman, whether she's a little girl, a spinsterish teacher, the woman who runs the joint, and finds out exactly what they need and plays to it. If you need a playmate, I'll be that. If you need a lover, I can do that. If you need someone to initiate you into the joys of sex, here I am. So it's basically about women getting their revenge on this this creature.
Well, that was my question, and the friend I saw it with, we talked 30 minutes the next night about it. I liked it a lot better than Bob. Is it really just about the effect of a very beautiful man on women of all ages? Is that what this movie is about?
Well, see, I want it to be about more, but that's all I saw. Mm-hmm. And that's a topic that has, you know, been worked over pretty well in the past.
What more could it have been about?
I that same night I went over to Liberty Hall Video and rented The Beguiled, the Clint Eastwood version, which I thought was a much more interesting
film. From what, the early 70s?
71. Mm-hmm. Much more sinister, much more entertaining. And I thought, of all the films Sofia Coppola could have remade, why this one? She didn't, for me, bring any sort of feminist perspective to the story. And
except, and here's my argument in her favor. So much talk goes on about the male gaze and how women end up in films just being the jiggly girlfriend or the secretary. This is about a beautiful man, and Colin Farrell has never looked more beautiful. He's smolderingly hot.
So was Clint in his day.
And so I think she's all about the female gaze, because like you said, even the little girl boasts at dinner, I picked those apples, mister. You know, they all want his attention. And my friend, who's a therapist, works with families who are in crisis and have issues between them, couples, and he said that's what happens. That is how men and women operate. And to get his attention means I'm doing something right. And I think she got that.
Well,
but the original film had that too.
That's exactly what I was going to say. The original film looked at the way each of these individual women, who were very distinct in their own way, looked at this.
We've got a clip. This is the little girl discovering Colin Farrell character wounded out in the woods.
This is from The Beguiled.
It's Martha! Hurry, come with me.
How did he get here?
He was all alone in the woods. I couldn't leave him there to die.
You know you're not supposed to go that far.
Is he dead?
No. Not yet. Quick. We need to move him to the porch.
Taboos will be broken.
Well, it sounds like you guys struggled with this one.
Oh, I didn't. I did at first. The next day, I couldn't stop thinking about it and engaged my friend who was there and loved it in a conversation. I was like, with the very question I raised earlier, is this really just about the female gaze?
The level on which I really appreciated was a technical one. The guy who photographed this, it's almost like a dollhouse in a perfectly lit diorama with hanging moss and mist drifting across. Mm-hmm. And even the soundtrack, bird chirps and distant cannon fire.
Right.
It really creates this haunting atmosphere, to the extent that when the camera looks past the gates out into the quote-unquote real world, it's vaguely out of focus. So this is our little environmental, our hermetically sealed universe.
Listen, but I think if you've seen the trailer, which Cynthia attests gives away way too much, and I do too, it's 90 minutes of your life to enter this environment, this 1863 in the South, and you can hear the crickets and the magnolias. You can almost smell them.
There's another factor, though. There's a black woman, a slave, in the Don Siegel film that adds a whole other dimension to the story, and she's nowhere to be found in Sofia Coppola's version.
That's interesting.
That may have been one too many layers of to tangle with.
She will say it's not a remake, by the way.
I know. It's inspired by the same novel.
Yes.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, of the, you guys always list your three top films of the week, and we put it on our website each Friday at KCUR.org. Is The Beguiled on your list? Steve, you said it is.
It is.
No.
Nope.
No. Yeah, okay.
I debated. It wasn't till yesterday.
It wasn't a slam dunk.
No. It wasn't. But as I just said, it's 90 minutes of your life. It's effective.
Okay.
I'll say that.
Okay. Time for a break. When we come back, we'll talk about a whole bunch of other films. Okja, we'll talk about, the Super Pig film, and we'll talk about
Okja.
The Exception. We'll talk about Megan Levy and Paris Can Wait. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And we are back. I'm Steve Kraske. Yesterday in the program, we fired up the grill and learned some unique KC-inspired barbecue recipes to get you ready for 4th of July. Get a taste for those at kcur.org/up-to-date and go to the NPR One app if that's your preference. On Monday, The Making of Music and the Anatomy of a Song, we hear the stories behind some of the most famous hits of the past five decades with Mark Myers. That's Monday on KCUR's Up-to-Date. Well, this hour we're reviewing some very interesting independent films with our film critics Cindy Haynes, Steve Walker, and Bob Butler. Let's roll down the highway here with a film titled Okja. It's about a young girl in South Korea who battles an evil international conglomerate intent on kidnapping her companion and best friend, which happens to be a giant pig named Okja. Now, there's a plot line for
there's
you,
a plot
Walker.
Line, and yeah. It's a giant minivan-sized pig. But this movie is just an interesting backstory. It premiered at Cannes in May. Netflix is showing it now. It debuted on Netflix and on a couple screens in New York and L.A. on Wednesday. So most of our listeners have Netflix, I venture.
Why isn't Netflix showing every single film we talk about on this show?
Why aren't they?
Yeah.
Well, there's still theaters. There's still the okay. Tivoli and the
and
fine arts.
The theater owners were furious about the way
this
is
furious.
Handled.
Yeah.
And it looks like they're going to have rules and regulations that you're not going to be able to submit films produced for television by Amazon, by Netflix and Apple. They're entering into the production business. So we're talking about companies that are actually producing and paying for these films that don't have initial release in theaters.
Mm. Okay.
This movie is a spectacular achievement in cinema, in my opinion.
Really?
Yes. Its director is Bong Joon-ho, Korean director who did Snowpiercer most recently.
Great film. Terrific movie.
It's about an evil corporation run by Tilda Swinton, who has sent 26 genetically modified pigs to 26 farms across the planet. They think to raise as pets. What they don't realize is that 10 years or so later, they are kidnapping them and bringing them back to a decrepit slaughterhouse.
To produce super bacon.
To produce, that's something that banal, right? So to that end, the girl realizes, this is my pet. You guys don't understand what you're doing. What are you doing and why? And so it follows her adventure first to Seoul, which is the biggest city they can fly out of to get to New York. She puts up a hell of a fight. She becomes comrades with an animal liberation eco movement group headed up by Paul Dano. Only for all of these characters and all these layers to end up in New York at a huge parade where the evil of the corporation's intentions are revealed. This whole pig, like I said, minivan size, is digitally created, and it's just flawless. It's seamless, good. It's just got incredible action sequences.
This is the future of digital technology, and I think it was used in a very creative way in this film, Okja.
There are two movies here. One I loved, It's the little girl and her pet movie.
Really? Okay.
Growing up in the woods, the forest, the hillsides, and mountains of South Korea. It's
right.
Gorgeous stuff. Some of the action scenes with it, running through the a subway station in Seoul, is fantastic. The movie I hated was a really, pardon my use of this phrase, ham-fisted satire of agribusiness that I thought took people like Jake Gyllenhaal and Tilda of
Swinton,
course,
yeah.
and basically turned them into ham actors who would be unacceptable in a local children's theater. I hated the performances. They were so over the top and cheesy. It turned me off entirely. Even the animal rights activists are a bunch of loonies. Mm-hmm. So it's not like you can cheer exclusively for one side or the other. Now, that there is a great satire out there lurking somewhere about the agribusiness and its excesses, I have no doubt. This doesn't do it for me. The other thing that kind of irritates me is this is a film which in theory kids would love, and it's full of F-bombs. Unnecessarily. What gives?
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We have a clip here, Steve Walker.
Oh, we do. Cynthia, do
you? I think you pulled it.
Yes. It's Jake Gyllenhaal playing Dr. Johnny, who's a wackadoodle
like
animal
Hanna.
TV host.
Crocodile Hunter
who's,
type character.
Shows up in South Korea to film them meeting the super pig.
10 years ago, 26 local farmers from 26 far-flung countries were each given a super piglet. This year, I traveled to each one of those 26 farms to decide who will be invited to the best super pig fest in New York City, where it will be unveiled to the world. You've done an incredible job.
Thank you.
Bob, you know what? Your point, I understand what you're saying. I really do. It was the sequence on the cliff. I'm not going to give anything away. It
Fantastic.
Was the sequence with the trucks that ends in a grocery store.
Even the sequence where she's sleeping, this big creature flops on its back and she sleeps on its belly. Just, I want to be there. This is great stuff.
And the digital work is amazing. I didn't understand Gyllenhaal's performance. I didn't understand Tilda's either.
Well, Tilda was trying to extrapolate something from her Snowpiercer role, which was far more interesting, and it just didn't work.
So I'm going to give you that.
Okay.
Excise those performances, but there's so much around it that is so fun to watch.
That's Okja. It's OKJA, and it's on Netflix, you're saying, right?
Yes. Yep.
Right now. Okay.
Yep.
All right. Let's move on to another film here, Beatriz at Dinner, Steve Walker. It's a dinner party at a Southern California mansion that becomes a confrontation between the classes.
This is directed by Miguel Arteta, who said he was inspired by a meme from last year of the dentist who killed the rhino, and that picture went all over the place.
Lion. It was
a lion?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. It's a rhino and Beatriz. But what we have is a very rich couple who are having a dinner party. The husband is John Lithgow, who happens to be a hotel developer and big game hunter. His wife has her therapist there, who's from Mexico, played by Salma Hayek. Her car breaks down.
You're using the word therapist rather loosely.
Well,
here.
She's a masseuse.
She's a masseuse who does a lot of woo-woo therapy.
Okay, yeah. She's a masseuse.
Whose car breaks down?
Masseuse.
Mm-hmm.
Beatrice. And so she invites her to stay for dinner. I get the feeling that the friends, Lithgow's character and their couple of their friends, have never been around a person who doesn't look like them. They don't spend time with people of color unless they work in their homes. And I think that point is most effective with the film. She stays for dinner. They get into it a little bit. He's very condescending. First, he thinks she's a waitress and asks, can you refill my drink? She goes, I'm not your waitress.
But that's an example, Steve, of where, you know, it was so expected. That scene was inevitable
right,
in that
movie. Right, right.
And it could have been a lot more profound.
Yeah, I was very much looking forward to this, but they have these high-stakes conversations and poke at each other a little bit. And then her fantasy world takes off, and you don't know where that ends.
Yeah, the ending of the film is very ambivalent.
The ending of the film was very disappointing, and I cannot recommend this.
It's
at
the kind
all.
Of film that the Scandinavians would have done a great job with.
Oh. I've liked Mike White wrote it. I've liked their films Chuck and Buck quite a bit. I liked The Good Girl with Jennifer Aniston quite a bit. our clip is a scene of kind of this heavy-handed, ham-fisted dialogue at dinner between Salma Hayek and John Lithgow.
Beatriz at dinner.
Well, when I first came to the United States a long time ago...
Did you come legally?
Yes.
Now, how'd that work?
I had family here on my mother's side. My grandmother died, and...
And they're all citizens, or...
Ah, Doug, what, you work for the INS? You're grilling her.
I'm curious. A lot of people come here illegally. I was interested in how she did it.
Okay, just ignore him. So, sure. You came here, however, who cares? And then?
I found a job at a health food market. I didn't speak any English, so my job was just to clean and lay out the fresh food. But there was a pharmacist there. Dr. Shibari, and he taught me everything about alternative medicine, all the therapies. He was like a father to me, the father I wish I had.
So great to have a mentor.
Dr. Shibari was a wonderful man, very wise. He saved my life, I think, because I always had inside me the desire to be a healer.
Good for you. You're working. You're contributing.
That dismissive kind of attitude, I see it all the time, and I hear about it from my students of color, and they could have done so much more with this than they did.
Well, and people are saying, okay, that Lithgow's character echoes Donald Trump, but it's not very deep.
Oh,
no, it doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
So no one's going to recommend this film.
No, although I have to say, Salma Hayek's bangs are the scariest thing I've seen this month.
Okay. Yeah. Beatriz at dinner, be forewarned about the bangs, I guess. Let's move on to The Exception, Bob Butler. It's a World War II thriller and romantic drama set during the final days of Kaiser Wilhelm.
Hey, talk about great performances from octonagenarians, or I can't even pronounce
another
that
one.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Christopher Plummer, at age 88, this movie.
Oh, my gosh.
He's wonderful.
He plays Kaiser Wilhelm I, the man who drove Germany to ruin during World War I. He went to exile in the Netherlands. This film, from a director David Laveau, it's his directing debut, takes place in the Netherlands during World War II. The Nazis have kept the former Kaiser, you know, in servants and food, but he's living in exile, dreaming of the day he comes back to regain, you know, the throne of Germany. Good luck there.
Mm-hmm.
He is valuable, though, for a couple of reasons. First, a lot of Germans regard him as, you know, their king still, despite Herr Hitler being in charge, and the British would love to kidnap him and take him back to England for propaganda purposes. To that extent, a young Nazi officer, played by Jai Courtney, am I pronouncing that right?
Yes.
I would say Jai or Jay, yeah.
Jai Courtney, is assigned. The first thing he does is scope out the scene and immediately glom onto the new servant girl, played by...
Lily James.
Lily James of...
Downton Abbey.
And Cinderella.
Mm-hmm.
It turns out there is a plot afoot to either assassinate or grab the Kaiser. But what really interested me about this was the interaction of Plummer's character with all the various characters. His wife, played by Janet McTeer, who is, if anything, is even more of a desperate social climber than he is. We have a scene here where he's talking to the new serving girl, played by Lily James.
This is from The Exception.
Further south, armored divisions are through the Ardennes forest, in behind the Maginot Line.
Oh, forgive me, Your Highness. I was told you have coffee at this time.
You're new?
Yes, Your Highness.
No need to be alarmed. What's your name?
Mika, Your Highness.
Dutch?
Yes, Your Highness.
I see. Well, tell me, child, would you have invaded Holland? If you had been in command of the German army, would you have invaded Holland?
Why, yes, Your Highness, of course.
I see. And what precisely is your military objective?
Well, it's very nice.
What is?
Holland.
God damn single. She's better than half the general staff. we will expect you at tomorrow's briefing.
Yes, Your Highness.
Cindy.
absolutely love this movie. It's a throwback. It's a thriller. It's romantic. There's action. It just, all of the performances are outstanding. Eddie Marson is Heinrich Himmler.
He's another scene stealer. He was brilliant.
Oh, my. Yeah. It is just probably one of the favorite movies.
The title, The Exception, refers to the German officer who's sent to guard the Kaiser and finds himself, because of love, being pulled into the opposite. He's the exception to the quote-unquote usual German.
So if this interests you, it's only showing, I believe, at Glenwood Arts.
Okay, that's it. Yeah.
And that's it.
It's really terrific.
It's really worth the effort to go see it there. Wow.
What's interesting to me is that, which I didn't know because my history is horrible, the Kaiser Wilhelm was Queen Victoria's grandson.
Right.
And I was like, oh, yeah, they have German blood. That's right. I forgot that. But Plummer's terrific. Anything Janet McTeer is in is worth watching.
So three thumbs up for The Exception.
There you go. Yeah.
Okay, there's a positive one for you. That sounds good. How about Megan Levy? And I should just tell our listeners, you're listening to Up to Date, and we're talking about the latest independent films now showing. Megan Levy, Cindy Haynes, a young Marine corporal based in Iraq, becomes attached to the bomb-sniffing German Shepherd assigned to her. It's based on a true story.
I have a feeling that this has been showing for, what, 4 or 5
since
months?
June 9th. June 9th is all, yeah.
And your description is it in a nutshell. If you're an animal lover, this is a wonderful film. You think there are moments when the dog's going to be in danger, and he is. But this relationship between a human being and an animal is so well done. It's a beautiful story based on actual fact. Stick around at the end. Seems like these days there are photographs of the actual characters in films.
During the end credits?
During the end credits, exactly. And that's what happens here. We get a look at Rex the dog today and Megan, his handler. So it's a movie that tugged, as they say, at my heartstrings.
What's the clip we have?
I believe it's Megan's getting a life lesson from her father.
Okay, this is from Megan Levy.
Rex would be worth it.
You know what you gotta do?
They won't talk to me. I have abandoned him.
Then you gotta find a way. There are a few people in life, not many, that you gotta find a way for. If you needed something, I would do whatever it took. Not because I'm any kind of great dad, but because how I love you is stronger than what I'm not. I want you to be a person who shows up for work, for your friends' funerals, for life.
I've tried. I failed.
So fail again. And just keep failing until they're tossing dirt on your corpse. Baby, all you gotta do is fight. You know how to fight.
Kate Mara plays the young soldier, and she does a wonderful job. I forgot she's the sister of Rooney Mara.
Yeah,
got a pretty talented.
The only problem I had with it, I mean, I love dogs, and it was hard to watch some of that, is that for the whole, every military scene with all the soldiers around, no one says a curse word. I said, this is a transparent appeal to a PG rating.
And we
all know
how much you like curse words.
I love them. Yeah.
Yes, you do.
I've never said one yet on this program.
It's not a bad thing. Okay.
So it is a film you can take the whole family to. And that's why it's doing so well.
Yeah, I think it is
PG. Yeah.
That film again, Megan Levy. Okay, Steve Walker, let's go to Paris Can Wait. It's one more Coppola film. It's about the wife of a preoccupied director accepting a ride from Cannes to Paris from a producer who insists they stop at every restaurant along the way.
Paris Can Wait. That's my review. They're trying to cash in on the success of Under the Tuscan Sun with Diane Lane, similar kind of story of a woman her age in a foreign country. This is awful. Eleanor Coppola doesn't know how to direct a film because the sound mix even is terrible. They were trying to pull a clip, and all they could hear was all this background noise overcoming the actors speaking. The man that she has this journey with, she doesn't even realize her character's written really stupidly, and he's hitting on her, obviously. He mooches off of her. He ends up never having any money at all these fancy restaurants, and she doesn't seem to get it.
Well, let's listen to a clip, an awful clip from this film, Paris Can Wait.
Yeah, what, I guess we are. Dang. I don't know. I'm sorry.
Let's just listen to it.
We French, we have a different attitude about marriage than you Americans.
Oh, and what is that?
We are practical. We're loyal to family and to marriage. But we are human, and we follow our natural human passions.
Well, we must seem boringly puritanical to you.
And guilty. Guilt is bad for your digestion.
Well, how would you say Michael's digestion is?
Well, he's an attractive man, and women do outrageous things to get into movies.
Okay, that's from Paris Can Wait, and nobody likes that film.
No,
well, I didn't hate it. Okay. I could tolerate it.
Hey, Alec Baldwin plays the disinterested husband.
I can watch Diane Lane for 90 minutes.
She's,
it's okay.
She looks great. Diane Lane looks terrific, and she's good, but this movie is, ooh.
Hmm. Okay.
Trey Stink.
I hold in my hands the final film of the day. It's The Book of Henry, Bob Butler. It's about an 11-year-old genius making plans to rescue an abused classmate.
Okay, watching this movie, I felt that someone had stuck a gun in my mouth and said, your tear ducts are your life. This is an emotional mugging. Mm. It's both creepy and cute at the same time. The weird thing about it is that the actors, especially the kid actors, are terrific. Jaden Lieberher, who was in St. Vincent and Midnight Special, plays Henry, a middle school genius. I mean, the kid has earned $1 million on the stock market. How? I don't know. How does a kid that age, you know, trade? His mother, played by the ever wonderful Naomi Watts, is basically kind of a, you know, ne'er-do-well, sort of a drinker. I mean, she cares about her kids. She doesn't abandon them, but she's not all that smart. He's got a little brother, played by the same kid who was in The Room.
Jacob Tremblay, yeah.
So you got good stuff going on here. Well, here's the deal. And I don't know how much to say about this. Tragedy befalls this
family.
Don't
say much, because we don't have much time.
Tragedy befalls the family about an hour in.
And you're saying, where is this going?
Yes. Yeah. And following instructions from one of her children, Naomi Watts plans to assassinate the cop next door who's sexually abusing his little girl.
Sounds like a thrill.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Right. There you go, folks. That's all I'm going to say about this one.
But you didn't like it.
You know what? There are moments where you see, you know, I said their tear ducts are your life. Every now and then they stick the knife in and twist it to the point where you actually start to feel something. And then you go, wait a minute, I'm looking at the big picture and this is BS.
Yeah, I've not read one.
Not a lot of enthusiasm for Book of Henry. Mm-hmm. If you had to pick three films to go see this weekend, Steve Walker, you'd pick what?
I'd pick The Beguiled, The Hero, and Okja.
Okay.
The Exception, Okja, and Megan Levy.
The Exception, Hero, and you know, it's still playing, so I'm saying it. It comes at night.
It comes at night. Okay. I want to thank our good panel, Cindy Haynes, Bob Butler, Steve Walker. Thank you all for coming in, as usual. You can follow us at KCUR up to date. You can follow me at Steve Prasky. And on Monday, The Tales of Tunes and The Anatomy of a Song. Great show. Hear the stories behind famous hits from the past 5 decades with Mark Myers. The great Bobby Watson composed our theme music. We had help this week from Michael Byers, Ron Yerman, Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Coy Duggar, and Marlia Campbell. Have a great weekend, all. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.